slim shoulder. I don't squeeze it or do anything suggestive, but I'm hoping it looks that way from the window where Suzette is watching.
You guys have just been wonderful.
Thanks.
Jonathan flashes me an uncomfortable smile, and then he takes a step back from me, out of my reach. He takes a quick look over his shoulder, then glances back at me.
Anyway, you have a good day, Millie.
And then he runs back into his house as fast as he can, slamming the door behind him. Wow, that was a quick rejection. Slightly humiliating, if I'm being completely honest. Jonathan didn't even play along for a split second. The moment I touched him, he couldn't get away from me quickly enough. And the first thing he did was check back to make sure Suzette didn't see anything. He knew she was watching him. What is going on at 12 Locust Street? What does Suzette Lowell want from us? It feels like even though we have our shades down, she is always keeping an eye on us.
20.
I'm late getting home from work. I usually make it out of the hospital by 5-ish, and depending on traffic, I am walking in the front door by 5:30. But today was one of those days when nothing went right. We had a patient who was supposed to go home today, but the patient's daughter suddenly decided that she couldn't take care of her mother, so I spent the afternoon scrambling to make other plans. I tried to convince the daughter that she could handle her mother, but she wouldn't budge. I then called 3 other family members, hoping one of them could provide a small amount of assistance my patient needed after her heart attack. I called a rehab hospital, but they rejected her insurance. At this point, I'm not sure what will become of this poor woman. She is such a nice woman, too. I would take her home if I could. Of course, I always say that. If I had my way, my entire house would be filled with patients whose families didn't want to take them home. In any case, it's almost 6 o'clock by the time I pull into the garage. Enzo's truck is parked in front of the house, so at least he's home with the kids. Despite the fact that Janice is overprotective, I hate for my kids to be alone at home for any longer than an hour or two. I unlock the front door to the house, trying to shake off the tension of my workday. I step into the foyer, and right away, I notice the silence. When the kids are home, especially Nico, it is never silent like this. "Hello?" I call out. No answer. I walk around the first floor of the house. It's not nearly as large as the one next door, but it still takes me a minute to get through all that space. I step through the kitchen, which looks identical to the way it did when I made the kids' bowls of cereal before I left this morning. Janice recently expressed her horror and shock at the notion that I made the kids breakfast that did not include some sort of meat protein. Nobody is on the first floor, I'm sure of it. I head out to the backyard next, assuming Nico is tossing around the baseball, trying to break a second window. But when I get out there, all I see is the perfectly trimmed, vividly green grass. Okay, the kids aren't in the backyard either. I climb the stairs to get to the second floor. The kids have taken to leaving their doors closed when they go to school, although our master bedroom door is open and the room is empty. Next, I tap on Ada's room door. No answer. No sound coming from inside. I turn the knob and push the door open. As always, the bed is perfectly made. I never have to tell her to do that. Frankly, I think it would bother her if she left for school with her bed unmade. Her bookcase is stuffed with paperbacks and hardcovers, and there's one shelf that has a few trophies she won on it. For a science fair and something called a math fair, whatever that is. But no Ada. Maybe they are all playing in Nico's room. My son's room is the last stop. I tap on his door, my stomach clenching as I wait to hear his childish voice calling for me to come in, or not to come in. But yet again, there's no answer. I open the door so abruptly, I almost fall into the room. Unlike my daughter's room, it's a mess. The blankets are in a big, messy lump in the center of his bed, and he's got laundry strewn everywhere. And that awful praying mantis is still in the enclosure next to his bed. Little Kiwi is here, but Nico is not. Where are they?
21.
Okay, there's no reason to panic. Enzo's truck is in front of the house, so he has been home. He must have taken them somewhere. Of course, it's not like our town is walkable. Where could he have gone without his truck? I reach for my phone in my pants pocket. I tap out a message to Enzo. Where are you? I stare at the screen, waiting for a response. Nothing. It says the message has been delivered, but not read. I don't feel like waiting for him to answer my text at his leisure, so I click on his name from my favorites to call him. The phone rings once, twice, half a dozen times. Then it goes to voicemail. Again, that in itself should not be concerning. When Enzo is on a job, he never picks up his phone. The equipment is painfully loud, and he's often wearing thick gloves that won't allow him to operate a phone. But then again, he can't be on a job because his truck is in the yard. I have this uneasy feeling in the pit of my stomach, like something has happened. I sprint back down the stairs, practically tripping on them. I check the living room and the kitchen one more time, looking for some sort of note from Enzo, saying he took the kids out for ice cream or something along those lines. But there's no note. There's nothing. I grab my phone again, wondering if I need to call the police. That seems like an overreaction, though. It would be one thing if just the kids were gone, but since my husband is gone too, the assumption is that they are all together. Enzo will think I have lost my mind if I call the police on him. Besides, I don't trust the police, after spending a decade in prison for reasons I still think are a bit unfair. You can't help but feel that way. There's only one police officer that I trust, but I wouldn't call him unless it was an absolute emergency. And this isn't an emergency. Yet. Okay, I need to think logically. Enzo and the kids are not here, but his truck is here. That means wherever he went on foot. The most likely thing is that he is still in the cul-de-sac. I exit the front door, trying to calm my rapidly beating heart. This cannot be good for my blood pressure. I took a pill this morning, like I have every day for the last week, and Enzo bought me a blood pressure cuff to monitor it daily. But it's still high. It's not even a tiny bit lower. My first stop is 12 Locust Street. As I get to the front door, I can hear noise coming from the backyard. It sounds like Enzo's equipment, which is a good sign. He went over to work in Suzette's yard, and he brought the kids with him. I press the doorbell, and after what seems like an eternity, Suzette comes to the door. She smiles when she sees me, but there's something in her smile that makes my skin crawl. I just want to collect my family and get the hell out of here.
"Millie,"
she exclaims,
"you look positively disheveled. Are you all right?"
"Fine," I mutter. "Are Enzo and the kids here? I need to get everyone home and start dinner."
"Enzo is here in the backyard," she confirms. "He's got so many helpful tips for gardening. Honestly, he is a genius, Millie.
Are the kids out there too?" She shakes her head, puzzled.
"No, just Enzo. I haven't seen the kids.
I think Nicholas has broken enough things in my house, don't you?" The relief I felt a minute ago completely evaporates. "The kids aren't here at all?"
"No."
When I got home, I felt secure in the fact that the kids had to be safe with Enzo. But if he isn't with the kids, then where are they? I search Suzette's face, wondering if she's messing with me. I don't think making a mother scared that her children have vanished is a funny joke, but who knows with this woman? Except, I don't think she's joking around. She hates the kids, so it's not like she would want them over here. "Can you please go get my husband for me?" I croak. Her voice softens.
"Of course, just a moment."
A second later, Enzo comes out from the back of the house, walking quickly. He has that same crease between his eyebrows that Ada gets.
"Ada, I hope she's okay. Where could she be? That girl would never go off anywhere without telling me."
"Millie," he frowns at me,
"what is going on?"
I squeeze my hands together.
"I just got home and the kids aren't there. I thought they might be with you."
Enzo looks down at his watch and his eyes bulge.
"You just got home now?"
I don't appreciate the judgmental look on his face. "Well, you weren't home either."
"Because I thought you would be,"
he shoots back. I don't understand him. He got home before I did, so he had to have known I wasn't there based on the fact that my car wasn't in the garage. And yet, he still left.
"Did you check the backyard?"
Suzette asks unhelpfully. "Yes," my face burns. "I checked everywhere." Enzo looks over my shoulder at our house.
"I'm sure they're hiding in there somewhere. We will go look. Ada would not have run off."
I can barely keep up with Enzo as he sprints across the yard to our front door. He stomps across the grass, smashing the blades with his boots. He must be really worried, which, in turn, makes me even more worried. He's generally the more laid-back parent between the two of us. I trail behind him, and coming up from the rear is Suzette. Why is she following us? This is none of her business. I am tempted to whip my head around and tell her to get lost, but I've got bigger problems than Suzette right now. Where the hell are my children? If they're gone... The front door is still unlocked, and Enzo pushes it open. Just like before, the first floor of our house is completely silent, except for the sound of my heart thudding.
"Was the door unlocked when you got home?"
he asks me. No. I distinctly remember pulling my keys out of my purse. I unlocked it. It's a very safe neighborhood, Suzette insists. I always tell my clients that the crime rates are some of the lowest in the country. Shut up, Suzette. This is not the time for a sales pitch.
Ada! Enzo calls out. Nico!
No answer. My heart is beating so fast, I feel dizzy.
Mili, can you call the school? He asks. Maybe we find out if they got on bus to go home.
The school will be closed, I remind him. But I can call the police.
The police?
Suzette bursts out, her blue-green eyes widening.
That seems extreme. You really want to bring the police over here? The kids are probably just out riding their bikes somewhere.
Enzo gives her a sharp look.
Ada does not have a bike, and they would not have left without telling us. They would never.
Nico would, she mumbles under her breath.
Ada!
He calls out again.
Nico!
I reach in my pocket again to pull out my phone. We have to call the police. Part of me doesn't want to, because that will make it all real. They will not be two kids who just wandered off for a moment and that are quickly found in a neighbor's yard. They will actually be missing. But then again, the first few hours after children go missing is crucial. We don't want to waste that time. Suzette grabs my arm, her fingernails biting into my bare skin.
You're being ridiculous. Don't call the police.
I look up at her perfectly made-up face, and for a moment, I see a flash of real fear. Why doesn't Suzette want me to call the police? Enzo is standing by the stairwell, frozen, as he stares at the wallpaper, his eyes narrowing. He is looking below the stairwell, although I can't tell what has caught his attention. I shake off Suzette's grip and join him. That's when I see it. There is a crack in the wallpaper. No, it's more than a crack. The wallpaper has been completely ripped in a straight line, and the pattern of the tear in the paper is the exact shape of a small door, the top of which comes up to Enzo's shoulder. We usually keep a large houseplant in that exact spot, but it's been shifted over to reveal the outline of the doorway.
Che diavolo,
he mutters. He reaches out and pushes against the defect in the wall. To our surprise, the wall shifts and starts to push open. It takes him some amount of effort, and a terrible scraping sound fills the room. And that's when it hits me.
Oh my God, I cry. That's it. That's the scraping noise I've been hearing.
I wasn't imagining that scraping sound haunting me during the night. That was real. That was coming from my own home. From this hidden door opening and closing. Except, who was inside my house, opening and closing this door while the rest of us slept? 22. I grab Enzo's arm before he can wrench open the door. As much as I want to find the kids, I'm suddenly terrified of what's behind that door. Please be careful, I beg him. He glances at me for a second, acknowledging my warning. Then he pushes the door the rest of the way open. It's a small room, not too much bigger than a closet. There are no windows, giving the room a stiflingly claustrophobic feel. I stare into the small space, dimly lit by a single flickering bulb. And, in the corner of the room, are Ada and Nico, crouched on the floor, staring up at us.
Ada! Nico!
My eyes fill with tears of relief.
What are you guys doing in here? How did you find this room? Your father and I were worried sick.
The kids scramble to their feet, wearing identical guilty expressions. I'm not even sure which one of them to hug first, but Enzo hugs Ada, so I go for Nico. He stiffens at first, but then he buries his face in my chest. As I cling to him, I take a better look around the small room. It's about half the size of either of the kids' bedrooms, and it's extremely dusty, like nobody has been in here for years. I'm surprised the light still works. In one corner of the room, there's a little pile of rusty nails. In another corner, there's a small stack of Nico's comic books.
I'm sorry, Mom, Nico says. I found this clubhouse to play in. I didn't know it wasn't allowed.
Only my son would rip through the new wallpaper of our house to find some dirty, disgusting room filled with tetanus-riddled nails and then make it his clubhouse. And apparently, he's been sneaking down here several nights a week to do this, based on how often I've been hearing that scraping sound, which nearly gave me a heart attack several times over.
We were calling your names, I say. Didn't you hear us?
Ada pulls away from Enzo, wiping her eyes. She is crying hard now, and when I touch my own face, I realize that I'm crying too.
We didn't hear anything, Ada sobs.
Suzette has stepped into the tiny room and she is examining the door.
It looks like there's a very thick layer of insulation here. It would have been hard for them to hear anything.
We didn't hear a thing, Nico confirms.
Suzette is looking all around the room, like she's appraising it for when the house goes back on the market, when we inevitably can't afford the mortgage.
I had no idea this little room even existed in this house. They must have wallpapered over it when they were renovating.
She lifts her eyes to look at the ceiling.
Maybe they felt it wasn't stable.
I flash the children a stern look.
I cannot believe you've been hiding in some mystery room in the house that doesn't even have a stable ceiling.
I'm sorry,
Ada sniffles. Nico doesn't apologize again, but he drops his eyes. All right. My heart rate seems to have decelerated to something normal. And my blood pressure? Well, I'm sure it's still high, because it always is. But at least I don't quite feel like I'm about to have a stroke anymore. Let's all leave this dangerous room under the staircase, please. I evacuate the kids out of the room first, then Enzo goes, ducking down to avoid hitting the frame of the door, and I follow. Suzette lingers behind, looking around the tiny space.
I swear to God, if she suggests we turn this room into some sort of playroom or something else along those lines, I might smack her.
I do not like enclosed spaces like this. I had a bad experience that I'm not sure I'll ever entirely get over.
I'm sorry,
Ada says again as she wipes her eyes.
We won't ever go in there again. I promise.
She looks really upset.
Ada takes everything so hard. I know you won't, sweetie.
Ada is still crying, gulping to try to get it under control. But here's the weird part. When we came into the room, her eyes looked red and swollen, like she'd already been crying when we busted into the room. But why would Ada have been crying?
23.
After the scare this evening, Enzo won't leave the kids alone for a millisecond. He spends 2 hours playing baseball in the backyard with Nico, and he even convinces Ada to play the catcher. By bedtime, both of them are worn out, but Enzo seems to have tons of energy as he strips off his t-shirt and work pants.
"Did you check your blood pressure tonight?" he asks me.
You know what? I am getting super sick of him fretting over my blood pressure. "Yes," I lie. "I checked it this morning. After all the excitement this evening, I don't even want to know what it is now. I got the full workup my doctor recommended, and everything was negative. I'm just unlucky slash defective."
"Did you try meditating?" he asks me.
He looked up a bunch of relaxation techniques that are supposed to lower blood pressure, and then he printed out a bunch of articles. Meditation topped the list, so he bought me a book about it, which is now collecting dust in one of our bookcases.
"Did you try meditation?" I shoot back. "It's so boring."
He laughs.
"Okay, so we do together.
Maybe some other time."
"Okay, how about massage?"
I laugh at the way he wags his eyebrows. Enzo gives very good massages. If he's up for it, it's tempting. But I'm so tired. And a massage is never just a massage. Not with him. "Maybe later," I say. He climbs into bed beside me and gets under the sheets.
"I can't believe we have an extra room we didn't even know about," he muses.
"That's not an extra room. That is a hazard."
"Maybe it is not safe right now, no," he says. "But I bet with a little work, we could make it up to code."
"We are not doing that, Enzo."
"Why not?"
I throw up my hands. "You seriously need to ask me that question? You know how I feel about tiny enclosed spaces." He knows. He knows everything I've been through in the past and how I've been locked in a place like that, which I could not escape. Something like that gives you permanent claustrophobia. This would be a good time for him to drop it, especially if he's worried about my blood pressure. But for reasons I don't understand, he doesn't shut up.
"We could fix it up," he insists. "Suzette says that..."
"Oh, what does Suzette say? Please tell me everything Suzette thinks." He presses his lips together.
"You know she is a real estate agent. This is what she does. She is offering her expertise."
"You know," I say, "maybe you would make more money if you spent more time working and less time in her yard."
"I am only in her yard a little bit."
"You're always there," I burst out. "In the middle of the night, no less." I hadn't yet confronted him about finding him in Suzette's yard at 10 at night, and there's no time like the present, especially when I'm already angry. He blinks at me.
"I do not
know what you are talking about.
A few weeks ago, I saw you on Suzette's lawn talking to her while I was putting the kids to bed. I say, what were you doing there?
I do not remember.
He truly looks like he means it. It's very tempting to believe him.
She had some question. I think she wanted a rosebush.
At 10 at night? He shrugs. It's not so late.
Maybe not for him, when he's up until all hours of the night.
Look, he says, this is not about Suzette. It was my idea to convert the room. I thought the extra space would be nice.
Extra space? I burst out. Enzo, the last place we lived was a two-bedroom apartment in the Bronx. This place still feels like a palace to me.
It's just, it is a lot smaller than Suzette and Jonathan's house. He frowns. You do not want that extra room?
I never want to go inside that room again.
I shudder at the thought of it.
And I thought you, of all people, knew me well enough that you wouldn't even ask. If you want to do something with that room, you can buy some new wallpaper and seal it up so that I never have to look at it again, okay?
He opens his mouth as if to say something, but then he shuts it again. He does know me well enough to know I'm not going to budge on this. But at the same time, I can tell he still wants it. He wants to turn that tiny, terrible room into some sort of playroom or office.
Okay, he says. We discuss it later.
Or never. 24. When I get home from work the next day, the whole house smells like glue. It's not pleasant.
Enzo?
I call out. I'm pretty sure he's home. Once again, I saw his truck parked outside the house. But maybe he's at Suzette's again. Maybe he's hidden in some passageway behind the wall where I'll never find him. After yesterday, I have no idea what to expect.
I'm here,
he miraculously calls back. I follow the sound of his voice around the side of the stairwell. And there he is, painting glue on the wall below the stairwell. There's a tarp beneath his boots, as well as a roll of what looks like wallpaper on the floor.
I called the realtor, he tells me. I asked her where the old owners bought the wallpaper, and I got another roll.
Why? He lowers the paintbrush as he turns to look at me.
You said you want the room sealed up, so that is what I will do.
I am astonished. I thought for sure we were going to have 5 or 6 more arguments about this room before he agreed to seal it up. And somehow, here he is, doing it of his own free will. I haven't had to nag him once.
I'm sorry I argued with you yesterday, he says softly. I understand how you feel. And the truth is,
he looks at the crack in the wall that is the only remaining sign of the fact that there is a door concealed within. Even the hinge is on the inside.
It makes me nervous, too.
At his words, a shiver goes through me. That room is so tiny and stifling. I can't imagine what it would be like to be trapped inside there. Well, actually, I can imagine it.
That's the problem. He reaches for my hand with the one that isn't holding the glue.
He's better now.
I take his hand and start to say yes. But then a terrible fear grips me. We haven't looked inside this room since yesterday. What if one of the children went inside again? What if we sealed the room up with them trapped in there? It is, after all, soundproof. Can you open the door? I ask him. He frowns.
But he's covered with glue.
He makes a good point. There is glue completely coating the wall, which would make it exceptionally hard to open. And yet, I can't stop thinking about the idea that somebody could be trapped in there. And next time I hear the scraping, it will be that person trying to escape.
Mili?
I swallow a lump in my throat. I'm worried that...
The kids are upstairs, he says gently. I asked them if they wanted to help before I got started, he adds. They did not.
Okay, I'm being ridiculous. There's no reason to wrench open this door and make a huge mess just because I'm paranoid.
I can help you.
He beams at me.
I would love your help.
So we get to work spreading the pieces of wallpaper over the hidden door. I can't quite rest easy until the door is completely covered. And even then, I can't shake the feeling that this hidden room will come back to haunt me.
25. I'm in my office at work when I get the call from the kids' school. There is nothing more frightening than being called by your child's school. There is nothing they could possibly want to tell me at 1 o'clock in the afternoon that is good news. The principal isn't interrupting my workday to tell me that my kid has won a spelling bee. They only call for bad news. Like 2 years ago when Nico fell off the jungle gym and broke his arm. That was a call at 1 in the afternoon. I'm in the middle of a phone call with an anxious family that I can't seem to break away from, so I just stare at the cell phone screen, my panic mounting. By the time I manage to disentangle myself from the call from the school has gone to voicemail. I listen to the message.
Mrs. Accardi, this is Margaret Corkum, the principal of Frost Elementary School. Can you please give me a call back right away at...
The principal's voice is flat and unfriendly. This is not a call about winning a spelling bee. I quickly dial the number she gave me with a shaking hand.
Margaret Corkum,
the voice on the other end of the line answers.
Hi. I say into the phone, this is Millie Accardi. I got a call. Thank you for calling me back, Mrs. Accardi, she says in that same stiff tone as in the voice message. I'm the school principal. I believe we met briefly when you took the tour of the school before your children started here.
Oh, yes. I vaguely remember Principal Corkum to be a pleasant, middle-aged woman with gray hair cropped short. Is everything... What's wrong?
I'm calling about your son, Nicholas.
She clears her throat.
He's fine, but I'm going to need you to come down here right away.
I grip the phone more tightly. My fingers start to tingle.
What happened?
She hesitates.
You really should come down here so we can talk in person. Your husband is already on his way.
They called Enzo too? Oh God, this is not good. I check my watch. I'm supposed to be meeting with a patient's family in 20 minutes. but my own family has to take precedence. I can get somebody to cover for me. I'll be right there, I tell her. 26. I speed all the way to the school. I can't think straight, and I nearly go through a red light. I've gotten a fair number of calls from the kids' schools over the years, but this is the first time I've been told to come in without any explanation of what went wrong. But the principal said that Nico is fine. He's not dead. He's not in the hospital. She said he's fine. But what if somebody else isn't fine? That thought haunts me. When I get to the school, I am comforted by the fact that there are no ambulances or fire trucks lined up outside. They make me sign in at the front desk, and it takes forever for them to make me a little temporary ID sticker to plaster on my chest. I follow the directions to the principal's office, where I find Enzo already sitting outside in one of those uncomfortable plastic chairs. He stands up when he sees me.
They said for me to wait until you got here, he says.
Do you know what's going on? I ask. He shakes his head. Even though he is as clueless as I am really glad he's here. Enzo can be incredibly charming, and if Nico is in some sort of trouble, that could come in handy. Although, I wish he didn't have quite so much dirt on his boots. He's left a trail leading into the room. We sit back down on those plastic chairs. Enzo keeps tapping his foot on the ground, and after a minute, he reaches out to take my hand. We exchange nervous looks. I'm sure it's nothing serious, I say, even though I am sure of no such thing.
I did not see any ambulance, Enzo agrees,
the exact same thing I had been thinking.
Is nothing.
This school is so snooty, I say. He probably just, like, had too many rips in his blue jeans.
He does have many rips in his jeans, he agrees.
He squeezes my hand. Neither of us really thinks that. Finally, the principal opens the door to her office, looking much like what I remember. She's even wearing a white dress shirt and tan slacks like she was during the tour. But unlike during the tour, she's not smiling.
Please come in, she tells us.
Enzo gives my hand one last squeeze, and we follow her into the office. Nico is already sitting there, and when I see his face, I gasp. He has what is definitely going to be a black eye, and his shirt collar is torn. He also looks like he's been rolling around in the dirt.
As you can see, Nicholas was fighting during recess today, she says.
Nico won't even look at us. He's hanging his head, as well as he should be. I can't believe he was caught fighting. How could he do something like that? He's gotten into trouble for a lot of different things, but never anything violent.
Who started the fight? Enzo asks.
Principal Corkum's lips tighten.
Nicholas did.
Nico, I cry. How could you do that?
I'm sorry, he mumbles into his torn shirt.
Why?
Enzo addresses the principal. What is reason they are fighting?
The other boy was making fun of a girl on the playground, Corkum says. Obviously, that was not good behavior on the part of the other boy, but Nicholas's response was completely inappropriate. He could have told a teacher, or if he did not want to involve the teachers, he could have used his words. Instead, he punched the other boy in the nose. So,
Enzo says shortly. My son sticks up for a girl, and now he is in trouble?
Mr. Accardi, she says tightly, your son is in trouble for fighting on school grounds. The other boy is at the emergency room and might have a broken nose.
I broke my nose once.
He waves his hand like it's no big deal, which makes me cringe.
It still works.
I thought Enzo was going to charm our way out of this, but he's just making things worse. I don't know what he thinks he's doing, but we should be groveling right now. We are so sorry this happened, I say to the principal. He will definitely be disciplined.
I'm afraid that's not adequate, given the circumstances,
Corkum says.
We are going to have to suspend Nicholas for the rest of the week.
I was afraid of this the second I saw Nico's face, but now that she is saying the words, I want to burst into tears. Suspended? How could that happen? How will this affect his future? Do colleges find out about third grade suspensions? No, that's not the issue. The issue is that for some reason, Nico took it upon himself to punch another boy in the nose when he's old enough to know better.
Fine, Enzo says.
We go home, then.
Nico won't even look at us as we make the walk of shame out of the school. He doesn't have the best impulse control in the world, but he's never done anything like this before. He never even pulled my hair when he was a baby. He's not violent. At least, he never was before. As soon as we get out of the school and down into the parking area, Enzo lays a hand on Nico's shoulder.
Who was this other boy you are in the fight with?
Nico's shoulders slump. Caden Ruda. He's a jerk.
It doesn't matter if he's a jerk, I say. You can't start a fight like that.
I know, Nico mumbles.
Your mother is right, Enzo says.
He pauses.
But I also do not want you to think it is not okay to stand up for someone who is being bullied.
Nico's dark eyes widen at his father's words.
Enzo, I snap at him. Nico is in a lot of trouble. He punched a kid in the face.
A kid who deserved it.
We don't know that.
He narrows his eyes at me.
I would think you, of all people, would be understanding about how important it is to stick up for someone in trouble.
He's right. I have always stuck up for people in trouble. And where has that gotten me? I went to prison because I stuck up for a friend in trouble. I kept her from being raped, but then went too far and gave up 10 years of my life. Enzo also sticks up for people in trouble, but he's always been smarter about it. After all, he has never been to prison like I have. I had hoped that Nico took after him. I don't want my son to take after me. It was the wrong thing to do, I say stubbornly. Nicholas, you're grounded.
Fine,
he mumbles. And you're coming home in my car, I add. I don't want to risk Enzo telling Nico again that he is a hero for breaking that other kid's nose. I hate the way Nico won't look at me and won't offer a sincere apology. It's not like him. Nico isn't perfect, but when he gets in trouble, he's always quick to say he's sorry. When did that change? It seems like my son is growing up, and I'm not sure I like what he's becoming.
27.
I check on Nico after dinner
to make sure he's doing all right. He was quiet during dinner, pushing his food around his plate instead of actually eating it. Meanwhile, Enzo acted like nothing at all was wrong. He truly doesn't think our son deserves to be punished. When I get into Nico's room, he's reading a comic book. As part of his punishment, we have taken away all his devices. But he loves comic books. He is sitting up in bed, his black hair disheveled, his eyes pinned on the page in front of him. His left eye is already turning black and blue, but when I sit at the end of his bed, I notice both eyes are bloodshot. "Hi, honey," I say. "How are you doing?" He doesn't raise his eyes from the comic. "Okay. Are you feeling upset about what happened today at school? It's okay if you are." "Nope." "Nico," I sigh, "would you look at me?" It takes him a few seconds to drag his eyes away from the comic. "Nothing's wrong. I'm fine. I just want to read." I squint at him, not sure I believe him. "Does your eye hurt?" "Nope." I look over at the enclosure where little Kiwi has resided ever since Enzo inflicted him on our family. I try to catch a glimpse of the praying mantis, but I don't see him. I look amongst the twigs and leaves inside, but he doesn't seem to be anywhere. Just a bunch of flies. Oh my God, did that horrible thing escape? This day can't possibly get any worse. "He died," Nico says. "What?" "Little Kiwi died," he repeats. "He was molting and I guess he got stuck in the molt and he died." "Oh!" I'm not quite sure how to feel about the death of an insect that I hated with every fiber of my being, but Nico seemed to really like him. "Where did you put him?"
"I flushed him down the toilet."
My jaw drops.
That does not seem like a proper burial for a beloved pet, even if that pet is a horrifying praying mantis. I had assumed we would have to have some sort of somber ceremony in the backyard, complete with a commemorative rock whenever little Kiwi passed. "You flushed him down the toilet?"
"He's an insect, Mom," Nico says in an exasperated voice.
I'm not sure what to say to that, but something about it is highly upsetting to me.
"What do you think you're going to do all week while you're suspended?"
"I barely know myself. You'll have to come to my office or go with Enzo on his jobs."
"I don't know."
"Maybe I can make a play date for you one afternoon with Spencer when he's done with school," I suggest. The two of them have had a few play dates since that first one, and they both seemed to enjoy it a lot. "At least that way you'll have some social interaction. Would that be okay?" Nico shrugs again. "Okay." Then he picks up his comic book and starts reading again. I guess our conversation is over. I wander back to our bedroom, but there is a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. I don't know what is going on with Nico. He's always been impulsive, but it's at a new level recently. Moves are hard on kids, though. Hopefully, this is just a phase, and he'll bounce back soon and be his old happy self. And stop punching other kids in the face. When I get back to our bedroom, Enzo is sifting around in the drawer of our nightstand, a frown on his lips.
"Mili," he says when I come in, "did you take any money from this drawer?"
"No. Why?"
"I had $50 in here," he says,
I think so, at least. But now, he's gone.
Maybe Martha took it, I blurt out. He raises his eyes.
Martha?
I still remember the way I caught her looking through the drawer of the desk in our living room. If she was going through that drawer, why not in our bedroom? I knew I should have fired her. She was cleaning in here, so maybe you should accuse her then. That went well last time, no?
One more false accusation against Martha will be the end of her tenure here. And she is very good at cleaning. She's so efficient. She works her butt off and never complains, even that one time I left dishes in the sink. But I also don't want her here if she's stealing our stuff. There are other people who are good at cleaning and don't steal your money. Plus, I've never felt quite comfortable around her.
Maybe I took the money out, Enzo says thoughtfully.
I think I did. I am just not sure.
Enzo, I say, can we talk about Nicholas? He slides the drawer closed. He juts out his chin in a defensive expression, and I can already see how this conversation will go.
What is there to talk about? This is unfair.
It's not unfair. He punched a kid in the face.
It bothers me that this makes Enzo smile.
A boy is being mean to a girl, and he stood up for her. Good for him.
He shouldn't be breaking other kids' noses.
The principal says the nose is not broken, he reminds me.
We did get an email from the principal informing us of this. Thank God, because we can't afford a lawsuit.
Just bruised, right? Is nothing.
It also bothers me that Enzo seems a little disappointed that the kid's nose wasn't broken.
That's not the point. He's a boy. This is what boys do. They fight. I did this all the time when I was a boy.
You punched kids in the face when you were a boy?
Sometimes.
Okay, well, that's interesting to hear. I don't know if he is exaggerating or if he really means it. Like I've said, Enzo has studiously avoided talking about his life before he came to this country. But I do know one thing. He had to flee Italy because he beat a man half to death with his bare hands. Although, in his opinion, the man very much deserved it. Even so, I have always looked at my husband as the more stable one of the two of us. I can be hot-headed, but he thinks things through. When he assaulted that man, he didn't do it in a fit of